Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
And you are listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Over the years, I have interviewed General Mark Hamilton about a lot of things, his time in the military as an Army general, his battles with the legislature to win funding for the University of Alaska system. But, you know, I haven't actually had a conversation with him specifically devoted to his love of poetry. And he joins us now from Boise, Idaho, where he recently moved to be closer to his son's family, and I presume your grandchildren as well. So welcome to Juno Afternoon, Mark. And I'm just wondering if you are there with your grandchildren, thoughts on sharing poetry with them.
I am. As a matter of fact, I have managed to ensconce myself out in my car because my little sweet four-year-old granddaughter has just got one of those little bugs. So she just wants to kind of cuddle up with grandma. And I thought I'd come out here and not trouble her.
Oh, sorry to drag you out to your car there, but we'll have a good conversation just the same. So any thoughts on poetry to small children? Are you doing any of that with your grandkids?
You know, I really have not, but that is because we don't actually live with them until this particular round. We're planning on doing that in a kind of a multi-generational home setting, and very much looking forward to it. And then all of my kids, as they've gotten to the teenage years, have been besieged with Grandpa's poetry over the years. Always reminding them that I started about when I was their age, about 15, 16, something like that.
So how did you come into your love of poetry? What was the genesis?
I'm really not sure, Rhonda, what caused it. I think there were just feelings and observations that couldn't be captured in simple rhetoric. It had to be, in order to share it, you had to do some sort of a poetic view. And I'm very excited about life and all parts of it. I wanted to share. And so I began to do it and got some good encouragement and got some wonderful critiques that just said, this is terrible. And that can really move you forward as well. Once you eliminate a bad way to do it, you get a lot closer to a best way to do it.
So what was terrible about your poetry that you got criticized for? And were you glad you took the advice?
It was that, I was in graduate school and had a professor in poetry at the master's degree level, and he demanded that you submit some poems as appropriate. And I did, and he actually used a foul word, which I wouldn't repeat, but he said, this is blank. I mean, you know, and then he said, I absolutely will not let you in my master's course. I do teach an undergraduate course, and maybe if there's room, I'll let you come to that one. But he said, in the meantime, let me tell you what your problem is. He said, you have to write about something you know. Okay? Nothing esoteric here. Don't write about sunlight and sunsets and love. And write about something you know. And I did that, brought it to the first class. We had to submit them to him, too. Okay, walked into the first class, the undergraduate class, and believe it or not, this is in the day of projectors. My poem is on the wall. Okay?
Uh-oh.
It was called Mullet Netter, was what it was, because I knew how to throw a cast net, and I wrote a poem about netting mullet. Same person says, at the end of this course, I don't expect you to write as coherent and vibrant a poem as this is. On the other hand, if you realize where this person was prior to one lesson from me, anything is possible.
Anything is possible. So do you think that there lives within each of us a poet?
Oh, I think so. I think, let me tell you why I think that. I think that all of us, poets or not poets, get in the situation and understand that we haven't been able to share. Now, that's for me, that's the entire thing. People talk about, and I'm not going to criticize people for this, but people talk about, I just write poetry for myself. I think you're missing an enormous amount of the value of poetry. Poetry is for sharing. It is creating the event, not to journalistically report that the event happened, but to try to have the reader or the listener to that poem actually experience the same sort of emotions that you did when it happened to you. It's a sharing event. And as I always think of it as a sharing event, I think it's very powerful way to start.
So who are your favorite poets? What poets got you fired up?
Oh, gosh. James Dickey is probably my favorite of all. All-American tailback, Clemson University. Just a rough, tough kind of a poet. And he just, the only way I can describe it, Ron, is he just gets away with things. it's just amazing. And matter of fact, you said I should bring a poem from one of my favorite poets. And I did. And you'll hear in this, if I get a chance to read this, he just throws verisimilitude. He throws permissions just out the window. I will have it all my way, he says. And so that allows him to create these monstrous, wonderful, beautiful scenes. And so his poem that I have selected is called For the Last Wolverine. They will soon be down to one, but he still will be for a little while, still will be stopping the flakes in the air with a look, surrounding himself with the silence of whitening snarls. Let him eat the last red meal of the condemned to extinction, tearing the guts from an elk, yet that is not enough for me. I would have him eat the heart and from it have an idea stream into his gnarling head that he no longer has a thing to lose, and so can walk out into the open in the full pale of the subarctic sun, where a single spruce tree is dying higher and higher. Let him climb it with all his meanness and strength. Lord, we've come to the end of this kind of vision of heaven. As the sky breaks open, it fans around him and shimmers, and into its northern gates he rises, snarling, complete in the joy of a weasel, with an elk's horned heart in his stomach, looking straight into the internal blue where he hauls his kind. I would have it all my way. At the top of that tree, I placed the new world's last eagle, hunched in mangy feathers, giving up on the theory of flight. Dear God of the wildness of poetry, let them mate to the death in the rotten branches. Let the trees sway and burst into flames and mingle them, crackling with feathers in crown fire. Let something come of it, something gigantic, legendary, rise beyond reason over hills of ice, screaming that it cannot die, that it has come back this time on wings, and will spare no earthly thing, that it'll hover made purely of northern lights at dusk and fall on men building roads, will perch on the moose's horn like a falcon riding into battle, into holy war against screaming railroad crews, will pull whole trap lines like fibers from the snow in the long-jawed night of fur trappers. But small, filthy, unwinged, you'll soon be crouching alone and maybe with some dim racial notion of being the last. But none, of how much your unnoticed going will mean. How much the timid poem needs the mindless explosion of your rage. The glutton's eternal fire, the elk's heart and the belly's sprouting wings, the pact of the blind swallowing thing with himself to eat the world and not be driven off until it is gone, even if it takes forever. I take you as you are and make of you what I will, skunk bear, carcajou, bloodthirsty non-survival. Lord, let me die, but not die out.
That is very explosive. Vivid.
That is quite. I love to do that one when you're dealing with, especially with the teenage boys. They don't want to, they poetry. You know, it's about love and sunsets and all this kind of stuff. And wait a minute, also about Wolverines, and then whip that particular poem on him. It's powerful.
So it's powerful. Let's talk about some of your poetry and sure. where have you published some of that? Where can we find it?
Oh, Ice Flows is some I published as a young man. I published a book called To the Colors, which was a book of poetry that I co-wrote with an assistant professor of mine. We were teaching actually at West Point. And then Ice Flows has got some in it. This one, as a matter of fact, I brought two, if I can read two. And both of those were published there. You'd like me to do that?
Yeah. And can you set each one up for us so we can appreciate it a little more, the circumstances that led to the poem?
Yes. Okay. The first one, you're probably familiar with the theater conferences that used to happen at the University of Alaska. And in one of them in particular, August Wilson, a wonderful Pulitzer Prize winning Afro-American poet and playwright, came to the event, featured many of his very, very special forms of drama. And he did some very courageous things in the sense that he acted, not as the director of the playwright, but he took parts and acted with him, and it was lovely. And the whole idea there of risk, the whole idea of trying something different, and the just magic of Valdez. It is just a startling place. And I was quite interested to see what the spill had done and the like. And I found in those two journeys and admirations a connection. And this is what it is. The airport is the wrong way to enter Valdez. I went out to the sound, out to the edge of glaciers, looked up at 12 stories of ice, snow made powerful by waiting, made transparent by pressure. I went back to Valdez with the tide, pulled by distant gravity, to Naked Island, years since oil came in waves. Palm-sized rock, layer on layer, worn jewer smooth, wet, shiny thatching hides as generations do, the memory of crude assault. Their polish makes you want to say it's better now. I have to risk uncertain footing, claw this wet black shining down three layers, maybe more, to see the imperfect rainbow spiraling back on itself like a soul seeping. But in the sound, blue dominates. Deep water, deeper sky, old ice, reflecting what cannot be absorbed. Is this what art does? I look for eagles riding their own tides, heads down in the patient pose of raptors, and the great eyes staring with two lenses, one the telescope of simile, the other to guide the talon strike. This is the art of eagles. What a ride to see the world at a glance, see the fish in all that blue and dive, wings folded, falling by choice, risking by need, trusting the second lens. to see what must be grasped. To find Valdez, I go back to the old town, standing like vertical driftwood, weathered gray and 6 feet lower than Good Friday in 1964, when the earth quaked and 20 fathoms of water rose, slow and moaning from the deep womb of the sound. Valdez killed, Valdez born, baptized and branded, followed its shadow to the next shore, across that same life-giving, judgmental sound. Valdez grew into something it could not cut down to fit. Is that what art does? As the theater at the theater conference, Black dominates. August Wilson shows us the uncertain footing, reads roles and poetry, generations of Black thatching, what a ride, risking by need. He washes over us like a 20-fathom wave, calls us colleagues, and we seize with the prism of flooding eyes the imperfect rainbow seepings of the ruined soul. I think that's what art is.
Well, in one of the conversations that we had many, many years back, I recall you saying that the wonderful thing about poetry is it captures emotions for another generation to experience. Did I remember what you said correctly?
No, I think that's, all of literature, and I'd even include songs in that. I certainly would include poetry, but strangely enough, there's also a conversation to be had for humor, for jokes. We exchange these things, all often centered on the things that bother us the most. Okay, the things that bother us the most, we share through these mechanisms. And part of the techniques, whether it be the song and the musical accompaniment, whether it be the poem with perhaps a discernible rhythm or rhyme, these things treat difficult subjects in a manner that can be digested, can be considered, and they're just very valuable in that sense. We tell stories about things that bother us, things that are of concern, or things that thrill us, which, that works as well. Things that are not, certainly it doesn't have to be deep and dangerous. Yeah.
You've got one more poem for us.
So I do.
How did this one come to be born?
This one, I was walking through the museum at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and saw this marvelous thing that I immediately classified as some sort of amulet, some sort of token. And I asked the curator about it, and that is a thing that's several thousand years old. It's referred to as the Akvik Madonna. And so I went back to my office and wrote this poem for her, Akvik Madonna. Even here in this museum, she is commanding. Brown as mahogany, worn smooth by touch. She is old ivory and old legend. Her glance sweeps past carved brows. The meridian nose stops above full, darker lips which form her Mona Lisa smile. From her chest, not on it, another creature forms. A seal, I think, but from her, surely, part of her, held by crude carved hands, embraced by parallel design, as though she could hold her creation and yet be Madonna. On her torso, the ellipses, four great universal arcs, ripples of imagination. Did the carver imagine in the indoor dark of seal oil lamps, as he held the soft white ivory in his hands and saw in the shadows the features rise to meet his knife, when he chanted, recalling his connection to the dream times. Did he tremble as I do to see the creature rise from in her, emerging without blade or birth, to present him in the moment all he knew of life and legend, earth mother, first mother, seal child, born without blood or brooding. On the ice, squatted above the breathing hole near the end of months of darkness, cradling Madonna, the hunter waits. Something like twilight glistens from the seal's wet head, sparkles from the curved ivory spear, the sun, the seal, the child, all of life, emerging, emerging.
I can see that carving. I think I'll have to go look for it someday if I make it to Fairbanks.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. It's so old, and it's worn so smooth that I had to think of it as a talisman. I mean, I thought this is something that the hunter would hold and the priest would present, and that's what it seemed to me.
So we're just about out of time, and just for some final thoughts from you, how did poetry help you in your life, or did it? Did you think it gave you an edge as a communicator?
You know what it did? It did something, Rhonda, that is actually, it ends up being very important. And that is, I think no matter what we try to do, all of us just carry with us these huge generalizations, you know? And the idea that, a football player at the Division I level, West Point graduate, Ranger, Airborne, and writes poetry. And so all of a sudden, when that comes out, and I certainly don't hide it in any sense, you have that delightful, and you've seen it many times in your life, that delightful experience when somebody goes, oh, wait a minute, I don't think I have this person totally figured out. maybe he doesn't fit into this. And I have found that to be delightful. Because I think with almost any sincere search, we will discover that about everybody that we meet. Oh, gosh, I didn't quite have them in the right box. As a matter of fact, they seem to be in several boxes. Who is this person? I've enjoyed it just for the fact that people are typically surprised.
Yeah. Well, I suppose they would be surprised. You know, a general, a university president, harbors this love for writing poetry. And just in wrapping things up quickly here, do you think that the world needs more poetry? I mean, we're in the emoji generation, text messaging. Our last president, was infamous for his text messages with its typos and all. I don't know. Do we need poetry?
Oh, I think we do. I desperately do. Of course, one of the problems, Rhonda, when you're 76 is you've got to question everything you believe and say, has the times just passed you by? But I can tell you what, there are no emojis that show the feeling of regret, that show the deep passion of love, that show the warmth of a smile. A smiley face is just a smiley face. A smile is any one of, make it up, 37 different moods that one human can pass to another. They aren't sufficient. And that's the thing that ultimately will harm the production of valuable poetry, is leaning on insufficiency. But poetry attempts to put precisely the right words in the right order to describe sufficiently that the reader experiences the insight.
Well, we will have to leave it there, and that's a good place to leave it. Thank you so much, General Mark Hamilton, talking to us from Boise, Idaho.
Thank you, Ryan.
Hope you enjoy time with your grandkids.
I will indeed. Take care now.